Welcome to the XAI Podcast, the show that brings together the people that foster inclusive innovation across Southeast Asia. My name is Belinda Ong, and I am the Managing Director of the XAI Network. Every episode, one of XAI's members will lead a fireside chat or panel discussion with other members, founders, or investors that have shaped the tech ecosystem in this vibrant region. If you like what we have to say, please follow or subscribe to our show. And do remember to tell your friends and rate us 5 stars so others like you can find and benefit from all of our great content. Show notes are linked in the episode description, and you'll find notes and additional resources there.
Thanks for being with us today. I'm sure we'll have fun. So let me start by introducing Lee Hong Min. So Lee Hong Min is the founder, chairman, and CEO of VNG Corporation. VNG is the leading internet tech company in Vietnam. So well-known achievements of VNG include Zalo Mobile Messenger, which has 70 million registered users, Zing, which is the number one digital media destination in Vietnam, excellent game development and professional business. Lee Hong Min studied at Monash University in Australia, worked for PwC and Vina Capital before founding VNG back in 2004. He's a leading thinker and speaker on technology trends, startups, and entrepreneur in Vietnam, along with being a regular speaker in global stages such as the World Economic Forum, Forbes Annual Conferences, and the Economist Conferences. As a firm believer in VNG's slogan, Embracing Challenges, Min is also an avid triathlete and marathon runner who nonstop looks for activities which well reflect that spirit. So with that, Min, I'll start with the first question. So you studied in Australia and then you became an investment banker. Can you please tell us about your journey that led you to create VNG? And I think at that time it was called Vina Game, if I'm not wrong.
Okay, so thank you, Tony. My pleasure to be here as well. So I think a very short version of the history of VNG is that I was a so-called hardcore gamer back in the university days when I studied in Australia. So when I returned to Vietnam, then that still be a big part of passion. And then it happened that I became the captain of the Vietnamese team going to World Summer Game back 2002 in Korea. That is one of the very first esports kind of like event in the world at that time. If something is the highlight of my gaming career, that was the highlight. And then after coming back from Korea, and me and a few of my gaming friends just set up one of the internet cafe here in Ho Chi Minh City just to have a place to play game while I still work my main job in investment banking. And then because of that internet cafe, we really saw the growth of so-called PC online game in its very early days here in Vietnam. So 2003 is a crazy 4 a.m. in the morning, our internet cafe is still packed of people playing online games. And before we play, I mean, if any of you here is a gamer, we play kind of like FPS or RTS, and we also play a little bit of RPG. So I'm still waiting expectantly for Diablo 4 to come out, but we never seen a level of growth with PC online game back in 2003. So that was the whole history of, we just say, okay, this sounds like a promising area, let's set up a company. So me together with, again, my gaming friend set up a company in 2004. And then that's it. That's how the company was born.
That's super interesting. How did you pick the first game?
So a lot of people ask, like, what is the secret of VNG success? And the only word I say is extreme luck, right? But the story is a little bit more interesting than this, because back in 2003, everybody in Asia playing one game, online game, which is called MU Online, which is a very popular online game developed by RPG online game developed by WebZen, company out of Korea. So everybody in Vietnam play that game, even though the market is small. But so the first thing that I tried to do is to go to Korea in September 2004 and trying to license that game to publish in Vietnam. And I got summarily rejected by the company, that they didn't even want to see me. So I just called, knocking on their door and said, hey, I come from Vietnam. You know, I go to the reception and said, I came from Vietnam. Could I talk to any of your business development managers? And after wait for 30 minutes, they say, like, sorry, there's no one to see you. So I just came back from Korea empty handed. And then I just read some report coming out China, and there's among the top 10 online gaming in China in 2004, there's 3 Chinese Mac game. The rest is just all Korean developed game as well. So I say, okay, let's just again try the luck. So I sent a free email to 3 companies trying to search their email of the business development managers and sent to them. And then actually one of them replied, which is Kingsoft. And I just flew to China in beginning of November 2004, and signed a licensing of the game from that company. By the way, the CEO of Kingsoft that signed a deal with me is Lei Jun, who's later become the CEO of Xiaomi. So we signed a deal. I haven't even seen the game yet. I only know that it's a martial art game, which is quite popular, the theme in Vietnam. I also grew up like reading martial art novel, a Chinese martial art novel, which maybe many of you here, if some of you are Chinese or Asian born and you understand the popularity of it, it's kind of like the Lord of the Ring of our generation, right, in this part of the world. So I just, that's the only thing I know about the game. I haven't even played it yet. So we signed a deal and turned out to be the most successful game in Vietnam. So what can I say? Just dumb beginner luck, right? That's it. That's the secret of success. You need to have extreme luck.
Yeah, for sure. Luck is important. Fascinating story. So I'm curious, how did you raise money back in 2004? Because of course,
yeah, we didn't have the network like this in the region. Yeah, so it's like everything else is family and friends. And so I just talked to a bunch of people I know, say like, I'm gonna do this, and I put in my saving, and you wanna join? Actually, a few of my friend, a few family member, a few years later, they really regret not putting money into this business. Obviously, because so I talked to a lot of people. So, and the first 200,000 US money of the company is that way. And then we, the only other external money that we raised is 300,000 from IDG Venture. At that time, that's what kind of like the only venture fund in Vietnam. I don't remember any other venture fund in the region. I think that compared to today, that's very, very different scene, obviously, both the industry and then obviously the venture funding and all the investment networks. So that's very, very different back then. So that's it. That's the $500,000 we used to develop the business. And we never raised any amount of money, I mean, primary capital afterward, as luck would have it. So we launched the game in June 2005. Remember, we signed a deal in November 2004, right? And at that point in time, we only had like 5 people and we absolutely had no idea kind of like how to do business. So we just jump in and do everything and raise money and do preparation. We launched the game in June 2005. And by August, we merely run out money, the $500,000, so we make a decision to commercialize the game. And August 2005, that's the first month that we become profitable, and we're profitable since then. So very, very lucky.
That's great. I'm sure IDG Venture must have been very happy to have invested in VNG. So obviously, you know, VNG is known to be a gaming company, but at some point you decided to diversify. And now you are in social media, you're in fintech. Would you mind explaining a little bit the process and how you typically split your time, you know, between all those activities?
I think it's this two things, right? So number one is a few years, so it's internal drive, and then there's an external factor as well. So a few years after we launched the game and our gaming business is quite okay, and we ask ourselves what we want to do next. So there's 2 ways of doing it. One is to expand the game business outside of Vietnam, and the other is looking at other verticals. And about the same time, we met up with, went to China a lot, and then we obviously see the rise of companies like Tencent and Alibaba as well. So we say, okay, you know what? It seems that the local internet market could be very promising. Let's try to learn from the Chinese counterpart. And we have Tencent as a model. So a lot of the thing that we did is similar to what Tencent's been doing in China, extending to different verticals and then attempting to kind of like build an internet ecosystem. We obviously not as successful as they do, but in a way that kind of like we try to capture the local, the growth in the local market here, right? And that was essentially how we build other non-game kind of like products and services.
Is there anything you would have done differently? You know, looking back, is there anything you would have done differently? Any regrets?
I think one of the things that I would do more differently is to expand outside of Vietnam earlier. I think that we've been, in a way, when we reflect, like you're looking at the China company as well, and many of them very successful in China, but then very have a hard time outside of China. I mean, with Tencent being one prime example, apart from their investment, very successful investment strategy, right? But when we talk really about the operating business, then Tencent not successful outside of China at all. And I think that's the curse of being in a market too big and too kind of like competitive, that they have always to put the priority in the local market. I think our market is not that big, but we also kind of like, you know, being carried away a little bit about the growth and then also the competitive inside. And I think overall, obviously, another comparison is the CEO Garena. And they start a few years after us, but we think that because they based in Singapore, and obviously Singapore being a regional hub, and it's a much smaller market than Vietnam. So when you start something in Singapore, you need to think regionally from the very beginning. So that one of the reflection that it's not about, like, you know, obviously look at the high side, and it's very easy for us to have regret. But right now I'm pushing a lot for our business to go out, learning from that reflection.
So VNG Corporation is 17 years old, still a private company today. What is the plan? Do you plan to go public, being listed at the NASDAQ, or emerging with a SPAC? What is the next step for VNG Corporation?
So I think I just share with you maybe a little bit more on the way we evolve over the years as well. And then actually that's interesting to start to think about our mission statement. So when we first, in the first few years, we obviously have absolute no mission statement at all, because survival is the most important thing and you don't really think about any other thing, right? And then a few years later, when we sit down and say, okay, we want to do modern game, and we came up with a mission statement that said, make the internet change Vietnamese life. And that the whole genesis of us investing and pushing in for like Zing and Zalo and all the other stuff that we do. And 2 years ago, when I started to say, okay, we cannot have that Vietnam define us. So we decide to really think about what we want to do. And then also I think 2 years ago, 15 years. 15 years is a long time to a company, especially this part of the world, right? So I kind of like think really hard about what I want to do, why I have to wake up every day and go to work. And I say, like, there's two things really motivate me. One is to actually being involved in building new products and new business that really have an impact on many, many users. I think that joy of seeing people using and enjoying our product, I think many of us here is working on tech company, and that is a big ride, right? It's not just about like being in a business position and making money, but it's about like seeing the user really use a product and see their life a lot better. And I think for a lot of tech company, that kind of a cliche, that kind of like sometimes there's a lot of debate about whether that's really true, or we all become greedy and power hungry and just kind of like use it as a shield. But I do believe in the romanticism of it. And so I said to myself, I do enjoy kind of like seeing our products grow and creating value. So, and then secondly is I really kind of like enjoy working with our team and see that you become stronger leaders and evolve. So, you know, I said there's two reasons for me to go to work. One is build product, and two is grow people. So I just make it the mission of VNG. And that's how I want the business to continue to evolve over the next 10 years, just to continue to build amazing products and having the best people growing within the business. And now we obviously want to set the side of a much larger playing field with the global market. So that's what we do. In terms of IPO for us, it's kind of like a milestone. We never really have to worry about money. I think that we build our business in a very conservative way. All the capital for new products and business come from internally. Like I say, we never have to raise any additional round, which makes us more like a dinosaur in the whole tech scene in the region, which not necessarily a good thing, but also not necessarily a bad thing either. A few years ago, when we see company like C or Grab raising, like Gojek raising billions of US dollars, we actually question ourselves a lot. And we say, like, you know, each company going to have our own destiny or our own ways of doing things. And even if we are not perceived as good, as valuable as other company, it's okay, because we are who we are, right? We're being shaped by certain force, by certain context. Let's not try to be someone else. So as long as we believe that what we do is in the right direction, we're happy. So we do have plan for IPO. I think that we want to do it not for all the right reasons, similar to other company. But for us, it's just a milestone and not kind of like a major, it's not a goal, it's not a destination. you know, the goal for the business is to continue living out its mission of building great products and growing great people. As simple as that.
So you mentioned building great products, growing. Would you consider corporate development and starting to buy out companies in the region, or it's more or less only organic growth for you?
In the past 17 years, mostly organic growth and growing the business internally, right? We do very little M&A and investment. We also start to change in that mindset as well. And for the simple fact that we think we need to learn more and we need to open more for like learning and grow. Because again, we are who we are. There's certain things that we cannot change. There's certain things that we're going to do because of the habit and the thinking being shaped by a long history. Then we need to really open up and learn from outside. So right now we do make minority investment into different startups in Vietnam and actually around as well. Like I said, for our game business, we increase our level of investment for our game business. We are investing in studio in other countries just for the fact that we cannot do everything ourselves, but we need to build that partnership and we need to learn from other people. So that's the goal. We haven't really thought about growing inorganically, like using acquisition as an engine for growth yet. We haven't really thought about it yet. We just like right now, our investment is more or less like we know that we couldn't do everything. Let's really work with the great people out there in the ecosystem and let's learn from them as much as we could.
So obviously, you know, the gaming industry in Asia, inside out, what are the big trends you see? The group here, as you know, all investors, and we are keen to identify great startups in the region in the gaming space. So what are the key macro trends you've been seeing in this part of the world?
I think the interesting part, and I think to us, that's a few things that we, you know, obviously, you know, gaming become really big and really important across the world, not just like in this part of the world. I think the market here has become a lot more attractive, a lot bigger than kind of like even 5 years ago. So obviously, the level of competition is going to be much increased, which is not good news for people like us, but I think overall for the market is good. For example, like 3 to 5 years ago, none of the big developers are going to think Southeast Asia is something that they want to do direct publishing. So it's easier for us to kind of like talk publishing relationship, right? You know, okay, we just hand over this part of the world for you. But and now a lot big developers in from China, from Korea, they consider Southeast Asia to be more strategic and a lot more important. So they're going to build their own publishing capabilities. So I think that is a major trend and something that we need to adapt to and we need to learn from. But overall, we think it's good because the more people invest in this market, then the bigger the market going to be and more sophisticated the market going to be. So even it's going to be tough short term, but long term, it should be good. I think the second thing that we obviously see that one of the things we're trying to invest in is development capability. And it's very, very hard. You know how difficult for a development studio in this part of the world to grow, both because of the size of the industry. Like for creative industry, I think that always need to have a critical mass of concentration for people to learn and to, again, expand and move from different studio to studio, and that how the creative industry, not just gaming, but also kind of like movie making and then music can develop in different pockets around the world. So in this part, it's much harder, even though it's growing continuously. We see a lot of talent in this part of the world, but then still we're not sure whether we reach enough critical mass for the development industry to really go. Another good thing about this is that recently, I'm not sure how much you know about the NFT space, but NFT has become like a crazy area in Vietnam because the most successful NFT game is actually being developed out of Vietnam, of a studio called Axie Infinity, even though that studio have a lot of international talent working with them. So it's more like the idea is born out of Vietnam, but then the key people, I think that like more than 50% of the key leadership team is based out of Vietnam from the US and so on and so forth. But basically you said that game. And then I think that now like 100% of independent studio in Vietnam is moving into the NFT space. We also kind of like debating and then also putting some of our resources in that part. But I think at least the development and the adaptability of smaller studios in the Southeast Asia region is very, very fast. So that's the two things that kind of like the three things that we talk about today, like looking at the overall of the market, how to work with the big developers, how to deal with the market become a lot more competitive, a lot more expanding faster, how to build out the development capability of, you know, in Vietnam as well as in the region, and how to look at new trends like NFTs and going to come next month. We don't know.
So you mentioned gaming NFT. Do you feel that there is room for another global gaming company such as VNG or Garena to emerge out of Southeast Asia?
I mean, Garena already a global company, right? I think that actually they run, if not the most successful game globally, even though the bulk of the development is coming out of China. The China studio, but then I think that all the publishing capability is based in Singapore. So already, Garena is the most successful global game company that we've seen in the past 5 years, I mean, or if not 10, based on the success of the game. Even though I think that the success of the game is really interesting, and you're looking at how gaming company being formed, right? Let's say the big name that a lot of you coming from the Western world, you're going to look at the Activision Blizzard, you're looking at Supercell, and those really creative studio. They really come up with new genre, they really build great product. But the studio coming from China, I think that they're really good at using a model that being invented somewhere and then make the most out of it, both in terms of like game design, gameplay, to make it scale and make it engage, and people are going to spend a lot of time and spend a lot of money, and also on the publishing side, on the marketing side, how to grow that to the biggest possible kind of like audience. I think that the Chinese studios and overall really master, I think, not the creative side, but I say the scale side of the business model. So which one is going to be more important or will win out in the future is hard to say. But at least, I mean, like no one has seen something like Free Fire over the last 5 years in a global scale, not to mention Southeast Asia.
I would like to shift gears, if you're okay, Mina. And I'd like to talk to you not as the founder of VNG Corporation, but now as an investor. Right? Yeah. An active member of the XA network. So first of all, what is exciting you in this part of the world? What are the key challenges you would like startup in this region to solve? And the third part of the question is, do you have any investment thesis?
I think maybe what I say is not going to be any insightful for you guys because you're going to be the same, right? But I think for me, obviously, I draw a lot of my views and insight because I'm based in Vietnam. But I think similar to other part of the region, there's a huge transformation from a digital perspective going on. We kind of been getting to know about what happened in China. So like you're looking at the digitalization in the different part of the world, like the Western world and then the developing world. So China and is an example of how visualization happened in a so-called still a developing world. I mean, like not really fully developed, but it's just been amazing seeing like the level of visualization of a country had become. And I would suppose to say that again, from a scale and perspective, China is the best in the world when it comes to visualization. Maybe not necessarily from an R&D and creative perspective, but from a scale and application perspective is the best in the world. So I think that this part, like Southeast Asia, hopefully and maybe eventually going to go to the path of China where we're going to scale and adapt and apply visualization to all aspects of the economy and the business and people life, especially we have seen that kind of grow in the past 5 years. It's 5, 6 years. In 2015, it's amazing to see kind of like this kind of changing happen. I still feel like before 2015, it's still considered, okay, it's promising, but we don't know like when the promise is going to be realized, right? But now everybody is like, come on, like let's try not to miss the gold rush in this part. So I think there's a huge opportunity in Southeast Asia countries in terms of visualization in different aspects, like, you know. So the challenge is how to adapt and build product and business to realize that trend. And I think it's still a difficult challenge because the resource, both from a people, from a talent perspective, I mean, to some extent capital, but even not, but mostly from a people, from a talent perspective is really still a major challenge here. All the tech company can say that, even in China, in the US, but I think here is much more challenging. So that number one, and number two being is Southeast Asia, there's a big debate in terms of like Southeast Asia is really one region or just a collection of different countries. And a company like C and Grab show that, hey, it can be considered as one big market. So another theme is how more and more company be able to really build a product and platform that cross different countries in the region. And we still think that it's not easy. It's very, very challenging. I think that's two big themes that maybe many of you can have seen. So basically, my investment thesis from an XR network perspective is just, I think I just want, again, I want to grow VNG to a global scale. So it's always important to build the network, to get to know some of you more deeply and not just plug myself into the network. So that number one. And number two is, again, I just, my theory of investment is very simple. I make the same amount of investment to, let's say, 3 or 4 companies every year without spending much time to really kind of like on the detail, because again, time is something that I need to use it very selectively. So my investment thesis is just make the same number of bets every year in great ideas and great people. And let's hope that one of them turn out to be a home run. So maybe of 10 bets I make, and then one going to be enough. But maybe of 20 or 30 bets, I don't know. I mean, you guys have more skin than understand me. So I'd rather not by spending time choosing too much, but then I just say, okay, of all the deals that come through, then maybe I try to make like 2 or 3 or 4 kind of like same amount of investment. And that's it. Let's see how it turns out.
And as you know, I mean, when we invest very early stage, it's all about the founder, right? Or the founding team. So what are you looking for in founders?
I think anyone who brave enough to be a founder already kind of like deserve our support in some way or another. I think that we all go through that part. I feel that anyone who found a company is the same. It's like looking for passion, looking, I mean, I think it's all the same quality, right? Looking for passion, looking for the why of why they do the business, looking for in general intelligence and also a little bit of humility. So that's for me, like, because how much can you assess a person by just hearing them talk for 1 hour is very, very difficult, right? So just make a judgment call of whether is it someone who really passionate and you really believe that they can do their best in doing the business. That's all.
That's a great answer.
Before we close, as a reminder, show notes are available on the link in the episode description. So do click through to get a summary and related resources. We hope you liked the episode as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. And if you did, please do spread the word about our podcast and take a second to rate us 5 stars. Thank you for joining us today. This was Belinda with the XA Podcast. See you next time.